Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This episode, a childhood friend, Kyle Starcevich, former Southeast Polk Ram and now former Iowa State quarterback turned specialist, joins the show. We go way back, talk about the history of our friendship, and then get into the Iowa-Iowa State rivalry, the fan bases, everything that goes along with that. Please enjoy this one. Let's have a day. Let's go. Welcome back, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans, to episode 145 of the podcast. Today, I will be going at it alone again, recording on a Monday, so Kevin's got a real job, and Drake's doing his thing. Today's guest, in the theme that we're trying to go about this season without Hawkeye football, which, you know, is still up in the air, trying to bring on guys that we played against, guys that were on the teams that Iowa had on their schedule for this year. And this past weekend should have been the Iowa-Iowa State game. For those of you who knew or know Iowa high school football well, a lot of you from the Des Moines area, from the Iowa City area, follow Iowa high school football back in the at the turn of the decade, when I was still in high school, we were still in high school. This guy was doing big things at Southeast Polk. He is Kyle Starcevich. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man?
Kyle is a good friend, and we go back a really long way, way farther back than even Iowa high school football. But sure. When did we even meet each other?
I was gonna say probably junior high.
Yeah, I was thinking like probably sixth grade.
Probably sixth grade.
So. And that's when it would have either been baseball or basketball. We played you in both.
Yeah, I forgot about baseball. So I was thinking basketball is probably sixth or seventh grade, but we might have met each other before that playing
like
baseball.
Yeah, like even like fourth or fifth grade baseball. Yep. Who did you play for?
I played for the Sky Sox for a little.
Okay, the Sky Sox. Yes, yeah, but that sir.
Might have been the same time frame, sixth, seventh grade. But
yes, sir. There's a lot of history in the AAU circuit of Iowa youth sports. So, sixth grade, Kyle was a four sport athlete at Southeast Polk.
Or yep.
Yeah, four sports. Yeah, so
until my sophomore year, I didn't play baseball. But
no more baseball. But yep. Still ran track, played basketball.
Yep.
Kyle and I go way back. Kyle was the same year as us on the podcast, so graduated high school in 2013 and found his way to Iowa State, which we will talk about. But even before then, I want to go back a little bit. The backstory of you, like, we have a very similar, you're way more athletic than me.
Nah.
You are. You're far more athletic than me, and you were blessed genetically with a little bit more height than just, you look more like an athlete.
Bad knees, though. We'll get into that too. But
yeah, of course. but Yeah, man. The first time we played, like, I mean, it was like 6th, 7th grade, and then all of a sudden you were kind of playing with us on the Storm, right? Like a little bit.
Yep.
AU basketball. I mean, I'm talking like we were playing legit dudes. Like, we're playing Peter Jock. We're playing all the guys that you see that come out of Iowa and go big time. We were playing with all of those dudes. At that time, as a 6th or 7th grader, what was like, was there ever even a plan for the future of like sports for you? Was it just like the common, like, oh, I want to play college sports? Because I look back at that time and I think we're playing against Peter Jock, we're playing against Marcus Page, we're playing against all these dudes who go big time sports.
Yep.
And now, 10 years later, you and I are, you know, just a couple specialists, washed up,
right,
you know, kind of deal. But at the time, it seems crazy to me that we actually ended up playing Division I sports as well.
Like, absolutely. You know, that's like the ultimate goal, right? Like, you think it's like super far-fetched, and then like, you know, playing those against those really good dudes, it's like you also realize how quickly like that basketball wasn't the move.
Definitely not.
I stopped at 6'3" white dude. I'm like, no, I can't shoot. I'm not going to make this in D1 basketball. But that's when I started kind of pursuing football, you know, a little bit more. But yeah, that was ultimately the goal, was to go D1. That was like the dream, you know, like when we were growing up, it's like they were just held to such a high standard, and to actually have gone through it now, it's pretty crazy to like look back on, you know?
Yeah, it's insane. You're a high school kid or middle school kid, and you watch the guys like play. Like, you, I mean, for you and me and Drake and Kevin, all guys from around the area, you see these players like on Iowa State, you know, guys like Jeff Woody, who, from Southeast Polk, correct?
Yep.
A guy who goes and plays at Iowa State, has some incredible moments, plays in some incredible games, and they're like these hometown heroes, like the almost larger than life.
Larger than life, for sure. Like when we were like growing up, going to games, it's like those, like for us growing up in Iowa and no pro sports, like that's it for us. Like that was it. That was like the pinnacle of like what you wanted to aspire to be, kind of like.
And then isn't it crazy? You get into it and it just kind of becomes life.
Yeah, it's just like a normal kind of. I just put a post on Instagram last week. I was like, because I got it. You know, I'm getting those memories from like 4 years ago now. Like, part of my senior year, or whatever. Like, or 3 years ago, and it's like, dang! Like now you're starting to reflect, like, because you do have to take time sometimes during games, during camp, during, you know, right before the game, just to like kind of stop and think, like look around, just like, this is crazy. Like, cause the younger self me, like, you know, 12-year-old me would have been like in absolute awe of what we were going through at the time.
Like, you're still a fan. Like you.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember our first year, in 2013, the fall of 2013, I got to travel with the team because I was super fortunate to come in, to a situation where there was only one long snapper. There was one guy on the roster. He was a senior and he was in his last season. And so they were like, screw it. Throw Kluver on the travel roster. I had proven that first year that like, if the apocalypse happened, I could go out there and get it back to the punter.
Yep.
And so I'm on the trip in 2013 in Ames.
Yep.
And, you know, we had played Northern Illinois to open up the year at home, which was awesome. Kinnick was Kinnick is Kinnick. But then we come to Iowa State for week 2. And this is now like,
that's your first playoff game. Like,
it's the childhood dream.
Yeah.
You've been on the other side of the fence how many times? 10, right. 15 times, literally.
Yep.
And now that it's the childhood dream, and like you walk out onto Jack Trice, and we've said it many times on this podcast. Jack Trice, other than Kinnick, was our favorite place to play.
Oh yeah,
it was. I mean, when you get the Cy-Hawk game going in either place,
absolutely.
And I'm sure it's the same. And I'd love to hear your opinion in a second as well.
Yep.
But like we walk out and it's just like, fuck the Hawkeyes, and my blood just starts like, ooh, I get goosebumps right now.
For real, me too.
And it the dream is realized, and there was many moments where I had to look up and like I'm looking at the fans, I'm looking at the everything going on, I'm like, I'm on the team. I'm not a fan here. Right. I'm on the team. I'm a part of this. Like, was it similar for you?
Absolutely. All the things you're saying are hitting like deep. Like, I'm like, yep, that's exactly how I felt. Like, you know, walking out in Kinnick, I think I made the trip too, because I was just a walk-on backup four string QB at the time, like in 2015 when we came to Kinnick. And that was it's a childhood dream. Like, you're just walking out there and like, you do just have to stop and look around, because I knew that I wasn't going to play. Like, you had a little bit more of a chance than me, but that was so cool just to absolutely like just soak it in. Like, I had no pressure, like, you know, I had nothing to worry about. So it was just cool to enjoy the environment. It was crazy.
That first year. So it was similar experience for both of us. Cause in 13, it was even hard to consider myself part of the team. Like, I really do think of myself as a fan, like that red shirt year.
Yep.
You're just
kind of along for the ride. Like, you were a little bit closer to playing, but you're just like, you know, you're not going to go in. You're just enjoying it. Like,
And so we came into Ames and won that year, took the trophy. So we got like the full experience of like, of the positive experience. 2014, you guys come to Kinnick and return the favor.
Yep.
And so both of us go to the opposing stadium for the first time and take the trophy.
Yep.
It is, on the list of things that an Iowa kid who loves sports growing up could experience, I truly think that's the peak.
Oh yeah. Got a funny story about 2014. So
go for it.
You know, I was a walk-on, the lowest on the totem pole. Like,
yep.
I was there, you know, cool. Everybody was taking pictures with the trophy after the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, well, I don't know if this is ever going to happen again. Right. So it didn't.
Yeah, you're right.
But so I was like, shit, I'm going to wait around and get a picture with it. Cause like, I'm not going to like waste this opportunity. Right.
For sure.
So I was the last one to take a picture with the trophy. And I think
on the whole team.
Yeah. The whole team. I was on the field, like last person. Right. So everybody like leaves, goes back up into the locker room, going crazy. But you know how heavy that thing is. Like, I was the last one. I was the last one. So I carried it off the field. Me.
Oh no.
By myself, like up to the locker room. I'm like, I was struggling, bro. I was like,
you felt good about it, right?
Oh, I felt great. I was like, I can't put this thing down. I can't ask for help. This is crazy. But I don't know if anybody knows that. Like, I was the one to like walk it off the field, like, because I waited around to take the last picture with it. So
yeah, there's so many funny little stories like that. From that, like, I hold, because it's the same kind of thing. Like, you'll remember that forever.
Oh yeah.
And I hold these little like things about from my time at Iowa, just like that things that don't matter. No one cares about who walked off the field with the trophy.
No.
I personally, every year in camp, day one, I was the first player on the field for 5 years in a row. And I took like pride in this weird thing of like, all right, practice has officially started for the 2013 year. I'm number one on the field. I'm the first guy. Yep. And I, so after it happened in 13, I made it a point in 14, 15, 16, 17. No one gives a shit about that, but it's the little things like that that like.
So for me, winter conditioning, like, I'm always an early person, so I'd always show up early. But like winter conditioning, I always turn the lights on in the locker room. I was the first one there every morning,
yep.
And you know it's 5:15, whatever it was, and I'm like, I still remember that. I don't know why, like, but I was the one that always turned the lights on in the locker room. Like, I was the first one there, you know.
It's like this sense of, because for us, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about, because we'll go back to you playing quarterback at Southeast Polk and just ripping people apart, including Marshalltown 2 years in a row in junior senior year.
Shout out me and Blake.
Yeah, true. Like, truthfully, like, what more could you want? Better defense from us probably is what I would ask for. You carry this sense of like ownership and accountability wherever you can. Back to what I was saying, you started as a quarterback, ended up being the unsung hero, the holder, like for your boy Garrett, which is like a super important spot and a lot harder than people know it
for
is.
Sure.
And we can get into the intricacies of special teams as well. But as a specialist, you don't have a lot of places to grab ownership of the team. Even if you're a strong vocal leader, like we both were in high school, very hard for us to go into a Division I locker room as a snapper or a holder and be like, all right, guys, follow me, you know? And it's almost a thing like if you do step up in certain situations, like some guys are going to look at you like, dude, fuck off.
Yeah, stop, like quit.
Yeah. So So the, you know, those little things of ownership taken where you can, it's so funny. Back to Southeast Polk, 2011, 2012, I guess even before that, because if I remember correctly, I can still think back to maybe, I know junior year, I came along with Gimble to Southeast Polk, and the other two there were Lanning and there was one other guy, and they were doing like a shoot for the Des Moines Register of like the four top QBs.
Yeah, it was Xavier James at East.
Xavier James, yes. Yeah. And it was you four, and you were doing like this shoot because you guys were elite, right? Your dad, coach at Southeast Polk, still coach?
Yep.
And your brother coaches now too, right?
Yeah, yep. He's coaching the secondary now.
Incredible. So coming up, like similar to me in high school, you know, your dad's a coach. You've been around the program. You know the system. Right. You know, the coaching staff knows that you're coming up. So as an eighth grader, like freshman, you started to kind of ascend, right? And you're going to start to kind of be on the radar of varsity football. Yep. Kind of describe your path there as we got into high school and then through your time at Southeast Polk.
Yeah, so you're right. Like eighth grade, ninth grade year, the coaches, you know, coaching staff knew who I was. You know, playing eighth grade football, whatever. Freshman year, we had a three-year starter. It was Cody Engel.
Yeah.
Great basketball player, great football player. So he was a senior. I knew I wasn't going to play that year. And they actually went like 1-8. It was like one of the worst seasons they've ever had. So that, you know, me coming in as a sophomore, our sophomore year, had a battle for the job when we went to South Dakota camp with another senior. He was Logan Beagler. He was the punter at UNI.
Okay. Yep.
A little while. He's a year older than, or 2 years older than us, but he was like a backup quarterback too. And sure. So me battling it out in my sophomore year. And then I ultimately got the job after going to the camp in South Dakota. Then the rest was kind of history. So, you know, started as a sophomore. We went like, I don't know, like 8-3 or 7-4 or something like that. And then lost to the, I think, Urbandale in the playoffs or something. But anyways, junior year was a really good year.
You did lose to Urbandale in the playoffs sophomore year because.
Yep.
I got the rules. The rules change. It was a close game, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Alan Lazard was a freshman.
Yeah.
Yep. Playing on secondary.
I still remember all this. That was the year that we played. So you started sophomore year. I started sophomore year at middle linebacker.
Yep.
We were absolutely trash. It was the year after we made like the magical run to the dome.
Yep.
And
that, Dowling, right?
Yep. We lost everybody. So we beat Dowling, then played City High in the championship. The next year, first playoff game, we sneak in as the 16 seed. And we've got Amara Darbo and the eventual champions, Dowling Catholic, in the first round. And it was, and if you remember that night of our sophomore year, the first round, it was cold and rainy.
Oh, cold.
It was absolutely horrible. And we got, what are 48 minutes of Dowling scoring at will in the sleeting rain.
Yeah, I think horrible. We played Johnson that day. And then I think we lost to Urbandale in the second round of the playoffs at home.
Okay.
Because we had to play Johnson, I think, the last regular season game and then the first game in the playoffs, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And you know how Iowa high school playoffs were then. It was like you played like Friday, Wednesday, or it was like Wednesday, Monday, Friday or something crazy. Like you got three games in like 10 days. It was nuts. Like just
–
it was wild. But then junior year was another good season. Started getting a lot of interest from like Division I AA, some Division I schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then senior year – had a really good year, had a few Division I AA offers, was really close to a couple Division I offers. I should probably backtrack. So I was playing basketball in my junior year and tore my ACL playing Indianola.
Yeah.
So that was my first ACL tear, and that was in like January. So I wanted to have surgery right away to get healthy for the football season because everybody knows like that summer going into your senior year football is like super important for recruiting, camps and stuff. So that was huge. It was pretty shitty, but then came back for my senior year for football season. It would have been like 6 months after. It was like after my ACL surgery was my first game. So a lot of schools are kind of up in the air. They wanted to see how my senior year would go after my knee surgery. And it was my best year yet. We made it to the the semifinals against Joel and Ankeny. And then with like, I don't know, a minute or two left, I tore my ACL again for the second time. Do you remember that?
So, because the way we work into that story, you're talking about your senior year now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so your senior year. So we had actually, we won the first game of the playoffs our junior and senior year.
Yep.
And then ended up playing you guys in the second round 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And it was the same story both years. Like offensively we could keep up with you, but defensively we couldn't. And so we just ran out of gas and you guys ended up just,
I think it was like 63 to something. Like,
yeah, it was like 63 to 21 or something. Yeah. Our offense could score, but they were out, you know, it was lopsided.
My dad always, cause he knew Blake, you know, from playing sports with Blake and stuff. And he loved to just, cause my dad's a defensive coordinator. He loved to just scheme stuff up for Blake. And like, you know, it was kind of funny just cause we knew your dad.
It was so funny, like how connected we really are, and Gimble too. And Gimble's been on the podcast the week of my wedding, actually. he really deserves his own episode.
He does. I haven't seen him in so long.
Oh man. He got engaged.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I did see that.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, you, me, and there were some other kids that we would play as well, but we'd literally been playing AU basketball against and with each other and then school ball against each other for like 6-7 years at this point. So it was just funny.
That made it so much fun. You know, not only me, but for my dad too, like playing against kids that he knew that were my friends from AU sports. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so then we beat you guys in the playoffs our senior year, went to the Dome after we beat Dowling to go to the Dome in the quarterfinals.
So you guys took out Dowling. So you guys are like the last team then to beat Dowling. Yeah,
that was the last year that they hadn't won, still to this day, hadn't won the state championship game. So you
guys are the last team to beat Dowling and not like,
for them to not win the state championship.
Holy
which
shit.
Is crazy.
And still all this time later.
Because we're getting old. Like,
yeah. Dude, I turned 26 in 2 weeks.
Me too. When's your birthday?
The 25th.
Yeah, mine's the 30th.
Yeah.
Yep. So 2012 was the last time Dowling hadn't, we beat them and they hadn't won the state championship.
Because Ankeny won it all that year because of Joel, who you ended up then going and playing with at Iowa State.
Yep.
And another, just funny because another, I mean, Joel is another kid who since fourth grade we would play against in baseball. He was just a savage. How was he like? So you get that like weird high school, like puff your chest out, like I'm the guy at Marshalltown, you're the guy at Southeast Polk, he's the guy at Ankeny. Like, and when you have these conversations or you like go to compete with the other kids, you're always like, oh yeah, that kid's a douche. Like,
exactly.
I always thought Lanning was a douche, and he probably isn't. He's probably like the best dude, right?
Yeah. So that's what I thought too, right? So like, you know, Ankeny Southeast Polk rivalry was huge for us like throughout high school. And then, you know, he had all this hype going to Iowa State. You know, he was on scholarship. I was walking on, but I was still going to battle for the QB spot. But you know, meeting Joel, playing with Joel, like he's one of the coolest dudes, just super chill, like not like how people think about it or thought about him in high school. Like, oh, this guy, like you said, this guy's a douche. If you play these other schools, like, no, Joel's super cool. Like, it was funny to like, once you get on the team, like all that stuff just goes away.
Gone.
Like, high school stuff does not matter at that point. Who cares?
It's wild.
It's funny how people in the community hold on to it for so long. And then like, you know, me and Joel are like, that was stupid. Like,
so stupid.
Like, it is what it is. Like,
I'll still have people come back. Like, I don't know really how to explain it. Like, that don't get out of that world. My dad is one of them. First of all, like, my dad's the worst at that because he was coaching. So it was like that, you know, that was his life.
Yep.
And so he'll still to this day talk about like guys that were good when Marshalltown went to the championship in 2009, and he'll like bitch about things. I'm like, dude, you got to get over this. Like, that's a decade past.
And I think that still holds true with like college stuff, to be honest. And we can talk about it later, but I think, you know, the fans and the community,
oh God,
like, to be honest, like playing Iowa, yeah, we're rivals, whatever. But like, you respect the dudes on the other side of the field because you're going through the same shit. And
100%.
And like, you know what they're going through. Like, yeah, you don't like the other team, but like you like the players, you like the coaching staff. Like I loved Iowa's coaching staff when I was getting recruited. Like Coach Francis, yeah. Is awesome, dude. Like, but like the fans just like blow it up like so much out of proportion. I think that like they don't understand that it's also just like the guys like in week to week too, right? So like you play that game and then it's like it's undone and over with, and people online will talk about it for a month or two.
Oh gosh, year. Inside the complex, it's over.
Yeah, you gotta.
You don't even think about them for another 11 months.
Right.
It's crazy.
But people all year will chirp at each other online and like
that's what college sports is about. Like the rivalries are built through fan bases. But I feel like you hit it on the head. I feel like the fan bases almost project the rivalry onto the teams. Mm-hmm. It's like you're like this is how it's supposed to be, and you're so right. Like when we're on the field, I actually felt like when we played Iowa State, like. The trash talking and respect level was at like an all time low for the talking and a high for respect.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, really why we brought you on the podcast is for that Iowa State's perspective. Mm-hmm. Every year, what was the feeling in the complex, in the facility during Iowa week? It was just like, There was no breath to take, right?
Yeah.
Like you couldn't breathe anywhere. It was like if I eat breakfast wrong, or if I don't do this lift right, like this is somehow going to create the first domino in the large chain to ruin this week. It was crazy.
Yeah. And then, you know, during the whole week, like we would blare music during practices and it'd be, you know, normal rap, whatever music normally, mm-hmm. but for like legit the whole week, we were blaring the Iowa Fight song, like on repeat for two and a half hour practice. I'm like you just hate it. Like it just, almost makes you like, not that we hate the fight song, but like, it just like makes your blood boil. And it's just like more of an annoyance. You're just like, let's just like, they just do that to get in your head. I think, I don't know.
But. We did the exact same thing. Super unfortunate. You walk into the facility. It's Iowa State week. They wouldn't do it on Sunday, Sunday shakeout day, whatever. But Monday morning, walk in the first lift group. Like there's young guys lifting in the morning because you know young guys are still lifting 3 days a week or whatever. You walk in for like a 6:45 special teams meeting, and all you hear is the Iowa State fight song. Or this interview from like 2000 and whenever, when you guys beat us and one of your players, it was like some lineman guy that was like being interviewed. And he's like, we took, cause the whole thing was break the rock for Iowa.
Yeah.
It isn't really anymore, but it used to be. Right. And obviously Iowa State knew that. So they were like making fun of it. And this guy after the game is like, we swung the hammer and we broke the rock, and it's just like blaring over and over and over. It's like, it's like this like psychological warfare that they put you through. So that by the time you get to Saturday, it's just like whatever I hear or whatever goes on, it cannot be as bad as what I listen to in the locker room all week.
Right.
Did you feel like, So this is my question, and it's going to be different for everybody is what I've found because Brady Ross was a fullback. He just graduated.
Yep.
And he actually said for him that the Iowa State Iowa game was his Super Bowl. Do you feel like it was for you? What do you think about like the fan perspective of that? How both fan bases will like not admit that it is, but by the amount of energy that they put into discussing it, it clearly is the Super Bowl for the fan bases. And how do you feel like you guys as a program actually approached that game relative to other weeks of the season?
So I think it was a little bit of a mental warfare. Like you said, like they would play the music, they would do that, but then they also like wanted to make it no different than any other week, which is what most coaching staffs try to do anyways. But I don't know. Some people like in-state kids, you know, it was a bigger deal than obviously kids that
just
from out of state. I would say, honestly, you know, it was cool for me to play in that game, those games, and, you know, be a part of those games. I guess for me, it would probably hold a little bit more weight than most. But honestly, I didn't think of it besides the outside noise, like too much bigger than any other game. I thought
The preparation was the same, right?
You had to keep it that way because, you know, especially what we do, it's like, it's so, mm-hmm. you know, we're specialists. So you have one job and you have to do it like perfectly. So it's like, we didn't have to like get all hyped up. You have to kind of stay kind of mellow because of what we did.
Yep.
So I think, you know, obviously it was a big game. You know, I was probably sometimes more nervous for that game than any other, just because just all the implications of, and you know this,
yes,
this better than anybody, like,
oh my God,
you mess up that game. So we grew up watching the Iowa State game. And if you like mess up a snap or if you dropped a hold in that game, you would be probably talked about for a long time. And when we go unnoticed, the only way we get noticed is if we mess up. So it's like, it's kind of a mental thing, but I think that's a huge thing in that game. You're just like almost a little bit more tense. Cause you're like, if I mess up, like it's an Iowa State game. It's different. Like I grew up watching this game. If I mess up an Iowa State game, like thinking about me as a little kid messing that game up.
Oh God.
Horrible. Right.
Dude, and it's like the mental, like inception of it all. You're like thinking of it as like, what would I think of if I was 13 and I was, if I would have known that I was going to be in this situation back then. And then you're like, holy shit, I'm way too deep in my head. I just need to snap the ball or catch this hold and put it down like I have 1,000 times.
So I don't know how many holds I had in my career, but my junior year, I had one bad hold and we were at Kansas. I caught it. I put it down. The turf was kind of wet. I spun it because laces were back. I spun it and the ball like just went out, like it just dropped.
The bottom came out.
I spun it and the bottom just fell out towards me and I picked it up, got it up, but Cole like stopped. Cole Netton stopped. He like kicked it, but it like legit went like five to 10 yards. And that like the Kansas dude caught it.
Yeah.
They start running around and like, it was kind of a close game. We ended up winning, but like that was the first time for me where I was like on the sidelines and I felt, I don't know if the camera was on me, but I felt it on me. And I'm like, oh shit. Like if this comes down to me, like messing up a hold, like I just ruined an Iowa State game. Like I will never live that down. Like in my head, I was like, oh shit. Like,
dude, it was insane. The amount of, I've never been really able to, I'm not the best. I get so much shit on this podcast because the way I tell stories and the way I go about explaining situations is just way too in depth. And I don't get to points well. We want to interrupt the show to let you guys know that Sundays are back in the NFL with NFLSundayTicket.tv. You can stream every live, out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and your favorite players. No matter where you live, NFLSundayTicket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE, BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE. Now back to the show.
I have tried to explain the amount of pressure on the individual reps of for us in the game. And actually what just popped into my mind is like, you ever seen like a bed, like a magician or whatever, lay down on a bed of nails?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you had a bunch of nails all put super close together, that is like a normal position. Like there's a lot of little pressure points that are poking into your back or whatever you're laying down, but not one of those nails is going to really put too much pressure on you where it really hurts. And those those represent the plays, each individual play. Like, you know, a linebacker gets 60 plays in a game or whatever.
Right.
As a snapper or holder, you go out and you get 5 to 10 plays a game.
Yep.
You're now laying on a bed of nails where there's only 10 nails and every nail has so much of your weight on it. Right. And
that's a good analogy.
And it's just like, if you start to think about it, it really will screw with you because I've been in that exact same situation.
If you're putting points on the board, it's important. Like,
oh God. And especially for a snapper, because at least for you, when you came out there as a holder, you know, you're still giving, like you're leaving points on the board. When I was snapping punts, we're not even in a position to score. Like shit has already gone wrong. It's fourth down and we have to like kind of save the day for a second.
Yeah,
there was a lot of.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
there's a lot of times where, you know, we're backed up in the end zone or we're in a dire situation where the coverage has to be great. We played guys like freaking Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley, and we're like, if this guy gets loose, it changes the game.
For and sure.
And it's just like, if you start to think about it, it will affect you. And I did it a couple times.
Yep.
And it's just the way it is.
And it's a weird mental thing too, because like when we go out there, usually no one's happy. You know, we just got stopped on third down, or, you know, we're kicking a field goal and people are pissed because we're not going for it on fourth. Like, no one's happy that you're out there. You know, after a touchdown, it's whatever. But, you know, when you go out normally, it's like, oh, this sucks. Like, we're punting or we're kicking a field goal. Like, no one's happy when you're going out there. And then it's like, it's like a mental weird, like, because you're excited to get out there, but no one else.
And the worst part about it is, you know exactly how you did. Like, you don't need to see the film, right? Sometimes the quarterback or the safety, there's so much going on and there's so many plays that when they come off the field on a drive, they're going to have to go back and watch film, right? I didn't see this coverage. I didn't see this guy slide. As a defender, I didn't see this motion, or I didn't get the call from this guy. As a snapper, holder, kicker, punter, you get one rep and then you get to come off the field and think about it for 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah. And it can mess with you. Like,
and you sit there and you're like, this is exactly what I just did wrong. And I know it. And because you are so self-aware of how you did, and inevitably the self-importance, like, again, how many people actually watched, like, I'm sure there's probably a handful of holds that you had in your 2 years starting. And I guess I didn't even talk about it. For those listening, Kyle, as he said, had started as a backup quarterback. He went in with Lanning in the class of 2013. And you could probably talk about it as well. But with your knee injuries and Lanning being so good, eventually switched over to special teams and became a holder. Yep. Did you try backup punting at 1.2 at all?
No, I never did.
Okay. So quick, didn't you punt in high school?
A couple times.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple times. So a quick little like story. So junior year basketball, high school, tore my ACL. Senior year, last game, football, tore my ACL. Decided to walk on to Iowa State. Played quarterback for 3 years. My junior year, Coach Campbell's first year. I was in fall camp, I was splitting reps with the ones and the twos with Joel. Jacob Park had just gotten there. But I was battling, you know, I was playing pretty well. I was in the best shape of my life. Like, we had a crazy hard off season in the winter when Coach Campbell's staff got there. Was in really good shape, in the best shape of my life. And then the fourth day of camp, maybe, I threw a pass. It actually got deflected, picked off. A kid the day before threw a pick and didn't chase down the defender. And he got
his ass reamed.
Yeah. So I threw a pick and I was like, well, you know, that sucks, but I got to run this, you know, this dude down. Like,
yep.
So I was chasing him down. He cut back this way. I planted and tore my ACL again for the third time.
Same one.
So I had two on my right at that point, and this one was my left. So it was my first pair on my left. And I was like, and I was holding at the time too during fall camp.
Right.
And that was my first year going to be able to play. And we played you and I in like 3 weeks to the day of like when I tore my ACL. Right.
Jeez. So
I was like, I was tore up inside. I was like, I'm done. I'm not playing this year. Like, it was finally, I was so close to playing. Like, I had put in all this work. Like, I had the best off season. Like, and I was going to hold. And then, like, you know, Coach Campbell felt horrible because, you know, he chewed the dude before for not running him down. And then I did it and I got hurt. And I was like, well, it wasn't his fault. Like, it was just a freak accident. But anyways, Coach Campbell, you know, pulled me in his office and said, you know, I still want you to hold. And like, to me, that was huge because he was like, he didn't have to do that. He could have just had, all right, next guy in. This dude has a torn ACL. Like,
yeah.
So I braced it up, pushed off surgery till the end of the season and played the whole.
You were thickened up on the leg that year. I remember.
Yeah, dude, I had a huge brace, like knee sleeve. Like, I didn't know if I could even run out on the field, let alone like get in the holding position. Like, you know, people know it's you got to be pretty flexible. Like,
That front leg, that the knee bend is not.
So I was lucky that it was my left. So my left knee was up. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if it was my right, I probably couldn't have played that year. So
I doubt you would have been able to get into that position.
No, I wouldn't have been able to get down there. So it was my left knee. I played the whole season with it torn my junior year. And then at the end of the season, I actually got put on scholarship.
Which is insane, dude. Like, that's so incredible of the stat. Like, I don't know what the history of Iowa State specialists have been like. I think they've been more, you know, every place is very reluctant to give a scholarship to a punter, snapper, kicker. Definitely not a holder.
Well, their own. It was, and at that point, after I tore my ACL my junior year, the whole season it was torn, so I stopped playing QB, and I was
right.
The holder. That was it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many dudes, and I'm sure that you've gotten so much. I'm sure you've gotten so much shit about this, because even as a snapper, oh, dude, you're a specialist. Like, mm-hmm. You get that all the time. But even to go as far as all you do is hold, like,
badass, dude. I mean, being a snapper, all practice, I just every once in a while get some snaps in, hang out,
chilling.
It's chilling. But dude, I had to put in all the work, but during practice and stuff, everybody's grinding. But I think what made it a little bit better for me is everybody kind of knew my situation.
Right.
And I had an ACL tear that whole year. So it kind of made me I had a little cred with everybody, because they're like, damn, this dude's tough for playing
in the
holder on a torn ACL all year.
You're right. You do in the off season, you do everything that everybody else does.
Right.
Even if it means nothing for the specialist,
coming
out of summer, I'm sure you were in the same position. You're so freaking conditioned. You're in the best shape of your life end of July, and there's just you don't get to use it at all, because then practice starts and you're like, okay, I have a field goal period. And for me, then I also had a punt period sometime, some team periods at the end of practice.
Yep.
Some days occasionally they'd run a couple special teams drills that I was involved in. And it's otherwise the other 80% of the practice, I'm just I'm a part of the staff, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Me with an ACL tear that year, I didn't have to run around anywhere. Everybody's helping out, doing things. Some of the specialists would have to help out with certain periods, holding bags and stuff. I didn't have to do any of that. So I was just chilling. It was actually a really cool experience, to go from thinking I'm done playing football forever to 3 weeks running out into Jack Trice with a torn ACL, which is pretty fitting, starting in my first college football game, which is crazy. Right.
Yeah, insane.
And so that was pretty cool.
At the end of your junior year, you were put on scholarship January of 2017.
Yeah. So January 8th, I think it was, when we reported back, we had a team meeting. We were supposed to start winter conditioning on the 9th. And at that point I was having surgery on the 9th, first day of winter conditioning, which was kind of nice, 'cause I got to miss out on quite a bit.
Yeah.
No, which I wasn't too sad about. But we had a team meeting. Coach Campbell pulled me and a couple other guys into his office after our team meeting and told me and the other guys that we were getting put on scholarship. It wasn't a big thing, because he had thought at the time that it was only going to be for a semester. Okay. But then some more kids quit and stuff. And he kept me on. He told me after fall camp that I was going to – or after winter in the spring that I was going to continue on for the rest of my senior year, which was huge. So So January 8th, I got put on scholarship. We started winter conditioning, and I had surgery on January 9th, which is crazy. I was I told him, I was I'm not going to be able to walk tomorrow, right?
Are you sure you want? Yeah. That is
crazy.
It had to be an emotional thing, too.
That was the most emotional phone call I made to my parents ever. When I called them and told them, because, they knew too, just, 6 months ago, I was telling them that I tore my ACL again for the third time, thinking I was done.
Right.
Well, I had some hard times where I thought I was going to quit, but I'm glad I stuck it out. Just because, that many surgeries and stuff, it just wears on you, right? But I'm glad I stuck it out. We had 23 or 25 walk-ons that started with me in 2013, and there was only three of us that made it all the way through 5 years. And then we all three got put on scholarship, which is cool.
Isn't it crazy, the attrition?
Yeah. And, Coach Campbell's staff they weren't there the whole time, but they respected that we stuck it out through a coaching change and then through all the hard shit that they put us through that first year that he was there.
Yeah.
Because I think we had 45 guys quit the first year that Coach Campbell's staff was there, because this stuff was just stupid. They were trying to clean house.
That's a weird time. Obviously, something that I never experienced. What was it like? What is that like when some? Because was it a completely new staff that came in?
Yep, completely new staff. The weight room change was just the biggest piece. Like, You know, I think their overall goal was just to get the guys that weren't truly in out, you know, and, yeah. and they did that. We had, I mean, it was a weekly thing, you know, during winter to have 3, 4, 5 guys, like they're just pulling nameplates off the lockers, putting their stuff in a garbage bag and they were gone. Like we didn't hear from Mickey and it was just like crazy. Cause the stuff that we were doing was just so hard. I mean, we got in super good shape, but they were just trying to get the guys out that didn't want to be there. So there was a respect level that we had earned from the coaching staff that, after that, we went through that. They're like, all right, these guys are legit, you know?
Isn't it crazy how in that environment, you know, you've got 120 guys, 115, 120 guys.
We had like 70 to start like summer.
That's insane.
Or spring like ball. That's, or spring that's ball. Actually, 70 dudes.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But like, you know, even without a coaching change, there will be weeks where, or like several weeks go by and you're like, I haven't seen this guy in a while. Like, where's he at? Or I haven't talked to this guy. And then all of a sudden you walk by his locker, nameplate ain't on it anymore. And then you ask around, you're like, oh yeah, he quit like 8 days ago. It's wild. Cause it's not like you talk to everybody in the locker room or kind of get around. Like you can go a week or two at a time without having a conversation with one of your teammates.
Sure.
It's kind of a weird situation. Probably heightened by the special teams aspect because you're not really in the team situations all the time. But as far as training goes, when they made that coaching change, what were you guys doing that winter? That was like break down some of the. I want to hear the actual nuts and bolts of the strength conditioning stuff. Like what were they having you do?
Honestly, it was just. Well, I think what made it so hard is, you know, I mean, most of the conditioning stuff's all the same for everybody, but. Like the weight room stuff was not tailored towards any position group, you know, like it was almost like asinine what we were doing. Like everybody was squatting the same weight for the same amount of reps.
Oh my God.
Lineman, kicker, wide receiver, didn't matter. And me with 3 knee surgeries, I was freaking dying. Like,
oh God,
I can't do this for this many reps. Like it was not tailored specifically to like your max out numbers, you're this, you're that, like, and really? If you failed, you failed. And like, everything was max effort. Like, till failure. It was just like, it was crazy. Like,
so,
I don't know.
So
they really
were just trying to like, all right, who's going to ring the bell here?
Yeah. And like, they knew the weight was too much for you, but they didn't care. Like, they were just like, we're going to get these guys to either like do it and show us if they're going to like grind and like, or just quit, like give it up. Like,
wow.
But a lot of seated squat, a lot of squats, just like, you know, just a ton of stuff. But I don't know specifically what made it so hard. It was just like that whole winter was just a freaking blur.
Sometimes the day after day aspect of it, even if it's not nothing crazy, it, like the compounding effect of how you feel coming out of those like 8 weeks before spring ball
and not seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, it, you know, it's, you know, from being in Iowa, it's like, you know, you have days where it's -20 wind chill, there's a foot of snow on the ground, it's 4:30 in the morning, like you're like, this sucks. Like, you know, why are we doing this? Like, this sucks so much.
And I was very lucky because I got to start so early in my career. And so I'd like to think part of it is because I'm mentally tougher than most people. But yes, also I had this incentive of like 2014, I started. Like, I started as a redshirt freshman. So,
and you're like, I got to keep my spot.
Like, yeah, there was like no choice for me. It's like, okay, well, I'm a starter. Like, I'm playing. I have the golden ticket in my hand. I'm holding the treasure. If I decide to like do things that are negative or don't work towards the right direction here, I'm literally handing over, like, I'm just giving up on the kind of the dream we talked about earlier in the podcast. Right. And so I was very fortunate that there were a lot of days where it could have sucked a lot worse, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, I'm starting at, so for guys like you who are still grinding for 2, 3, 4 years to get to a solid spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough.
It was tough. Cause you know, they always bring in these new young scholarship guys and no matter what, it's like, they're a little bit ahead of you just to start with, just cause like, and then you got to show them a little bit more. And then with my knee surgeries, it like kept knocking me down. And then like, that's why I truly fell in love with like being the holder and holder only. It's like, I had a rule finally that like you, it's like, I'm going to work hard because I got a position now. I'm not going to give it up. Like, I'm going to be the best damn holder that I can be. Cause like, this is all I'm doing. I'm going to like focus on this. Like, cause most like, you know, do other positions, quarterback, punter. Like, they have other stuff to worry about. Like, I was legit holder only. It was, it was crazy. But then I took that and like really made sure it was important, you know, obviously to me, and to make sure everybody knew that I was like going to give it my all. Cause it's like, that's all I did.
Yeah. So now it's time to get special teams geeky. You had two kickers. You held for Netton and you held for Owens, correct?
Yep.
And actually, side note, before we move forward, Colin was there when you were there as well, right?
Yep.
And I hang out with Colin like occasionally now because his girlfriend Bailey is like friends with Lauren. Lauren's friends, like a mutual friend. So I talk with Colin somewhat frequently too. So you held for two different kickers. Was there a significant difference in how they liked their ball tilted? That's such a question too.
They were actually pretty similar, to be honest with you, which made it super easy for me.
That's nice.
Yeah. They were both, just, you know, slightly angled. I think, and I can't remember which one, but I think it might have been Garrett. He liked it a little bit more forward, like towards the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Kind of opened up that sweet spot a little bit more for him.
Yeah.
It made it look bigger in his eyes. But I think it was funny, like the difference between the two of them. Cole was just super lax. Like, and Cole will say this to you, like, he didn't like football. Like that.
I love it.
And he's all-time leading scorer at Iowa State.
Yeah, like, he's insane. He's a good kicker.
Amazing kicker. You know, he hated all the offseason stuff, but he was fantastic once the lights turned on. Like, that was just how it was. He was just super chill. Like, I didn't have to worry about Cole. Didn't have to, like, talk with Cole. Didn't have to, like, you know, anything. He was just did what he did, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And Garrett was super chill, too. But sometimes I would tell Garrett, like, you know, you got this. Like, give him a little bit more confidence boosters. Like,
sure.
Just like, you know, it's funny how the relationships are built with your specialist unit that hold
for
our staff.
Sure.
And same thing, you know, Quinn Sontag was my snapper for both years.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed that positive reinforcement, which isn't wrong. Like, it isn't a bad thing. You know,
sure.
And even if it was, so the funny part is, even if there was a bad snap or something that would come up, he would ask how the snap was. And I told him every time it was fantastic.
Like, yep.
Because if I told him, like, dude, that was bad, like, you got to get it up, like, he would mentally, like, not be okay for the next.
And some guys are that way, too. God, this is so funny to hear about because it's the same thing I went through. So, funny. This is truly incredible. I don't know if anybody has this story. I started 4 years. I had four different holders.
Mm-hmm.
And three different punters in 4 years. So, and like three different kickers. So the unit for us every year on both things, it was just completely rotating. So the relationships were, I got to see so many different ones.
And people think that it's the same for you every time, but when you look between your legs and see someone new, it's different.
It's different.
It's so different.
And what's also crazy is, and they're not huge differences. Like, to some extent it is just, you know, in the end, it's snap the ball, hold the ball, kick the ball.
Yeah.
But even in practice, when you have to take reps with like the twos as well, you have to hold for a different guy. You have to catch a snap from a different snapper.
Yeah.
Like, it's the best way to describe it as a holder. Like, the holder is the caddy for the unit. And so for us, Rastetter, Keith Duncan and Miguel, both of those kickers, Miguel especially, because Miguel was like a super kind of nerdy, heady guy. Rastetter would walk out there and kind of like, he'd get the feel of the wind for the kicker. They'd both kind of, and they'd kind of talk to each other like, what are you thinking here? Like, push it right, push it left, drive it. Like, you know, just little specialist things. And the relationship is so funny.
They are.
My first year, so Marshall Kane was the kicker. Yep. And he was older than me by 2 years. And I was never great at laces. Like, my laces weren't, I wasn't that guy who was like perfect laces.
Right.
I would put it like between 12 and 3. Mm-hmm. Usually like 3 o'clock, which for those listening is towards the the holder's body.
So it's just a slight push for the holder.
Slight little right hand push for the holder. So it wasn't not a big deal.
This one's a lot harder than, you know, that one.
Right. So if you're gonna miss, obviously you don't want the laces straight back. If you're gonna miss for the holder, he'd prefer it into his body because he can see it. So it wasn't bad in that sense, but there were times where with Marshall, in the middle of the games, like game reps, I would send him like a six or something he could see on the backside, and I could hear from back there, "Fuck you, Kluver." And I'm like laughing as I'm trying to like hold my positioning on the lineman. Like Marshall's kicking the ball and yelling, "Fuck you, Kluver," because that's I gave him like a six snap. But he was so great at it. It's so funny how people process the laces. Marshall didn't care. Like he was just going to kick it wherever it ended up.
Yep.
And he could like, he could kind of lose focus like that and still kick a great ball. Yeah. Whereas like some kickers will see a slightly wrong tilt or the laces. If they see the laces at all, it'll screw them up. Like they'll edit their motion and it just messes with them. Keith Duncan, he seems to be just unfazed by anything, which is insane.
I got a funny holder story when we were at, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So their student section's pretty rowdy. Like that was probably one of the loudest places, to be honest. And it's not the biggest stadium, but they were just wild, like selling beer at the stadium. It was just a rowdy crowd. It was a pretty big field goal at the time. It was probably like a 42 yarder or something. But so I looked back at Garrett, like to get the okay, like he was ready. Yep. And I got a freaking huge green laser pointer.
No,
hit me right in the eye, bro. Like, and there's pictures of it, like on my arm, on my helmet.
Oh my God.
And I looked back at Garrett and it hit me right in the eye. And like the whistles blew. Cause like the ref saw it. And then, you know how, you know, when you,
they actually noticed it.
Yeah. They saw it.
You're lucky, dude.
So lucky. So, you know, they heard Quinn heard the whistles and he snapped the ball. Cause you know, just to, you know,
right. Get the practice rep.
Yeah, just get the practice rep because he didn't know if it was a timeout or something. The ball just goes like right by me, like couldn't see a thing. So Coach Campbell's freaking out. Like the one ref didn't see it. He goes, "Who? Like, where was it coming from?" I was like, "Because when someone points you with a laser pointer, like it goes, you see the whole line of it."
Yeah, right? You can see like the whole tracking.
I was on the sidelines. It was like me, Coach Campbell, this ref. I'm like, "Dude, it's up there. Like it's in the student section. Like I saw it. It's like he's like way up top."
These bastards.
So I was like, damn, this sucks. So like we kind of regroup. He's like, "You good?" I'm like, "Yeah, we're good. Like, let's just go do this." Like, so we get out there again and this thing's like all over me. Like, and I like stop. I'm like, "What the hell?" Like I raised my arms. Like, I was like, "They're still doing it." Like the ref blew it dead. Like, so we were on the field for like 25 minutes. So like they reviewed it. Like I was on review. Like they were like, "Show them the laser pointer." Like,
holy shit.
And then they called the Big 12 commissioner like during this time period of like, cause they're like, "What do we do?" Like, so then they like gave a last announcement that's like, you know, if they play do the laser pointer again, it's gonna be a personal foul against West Virginia. Like they warned the fans.
Damn.
So we go out there a third time, and by that time there's just like so much like shit going on. Like you're just like,
I'm now
like,
you're way out of whack now. Way
and
out
Garrett's like taking like 16 practice like run throughs, and I'm like,
yep.
All right, like let's all relax, like you know, because it's so mentally messes you up. So we actually got a good kickoff and he nailed it. It was like a 42 or 45 yarder, which was pretty cool at the time. But that was the craziest like experience that I had like holding. I was like, because you're never in the spotlight. Like,
yeah, what sucks is like you feel bad for like as a specialist in practice, everything is bang bang bang. Like meetings are bang bang. As a specialist, yeah, like. You do not waste time. If you're a specialist or you're a scout team player,
in and out.
You are there to fill a role and not waste time for other people. And so like in a game, when stuff happens like that and you're out there for amount of time that is irregular. Weird. Oh, it's so weird. You're like, okay, it's in that moment. You're almost like, you know what? Screw it. Put the lasers in my eyes. I'll just hold it. Like, I don't.
I was like, you know what? Fuck this. Like, I'm doing it. Like, let's just go. I'm sure it's about, like, on some game winners when the opposing teams are, like, calling timeouts. Like,
yeah.
You're out there for just a weird, you know, do I stay out there? Do I just, like
in one of the.
Do I go to the sideline? Like.
I had a couple, and I had a couple that I was a part of. I mean, in 4 years, you kind of just, like, you're going to hit the lottery at some point.
See, I never what got was the game winner winning
holds. I was just going to say, what's the biggest kick that you held for, probably? I mean, you got to at least witness the freaking Netton kick that beat us in Kinnick. Yeah. Which, by the way, like, you guys did win that game, but such a shitty football game.
Oh, it was crazy.
God.
Yeah, it was. The biggest hole, I don't know if there's one single one, per se. The Oklahoma game was crazy my senior year when we beat Baker Mayfield and Oklahoma at OU.
That's pretty sick.
And Garrett went 7-for-7 that day. Like, we put a lot of points on the board because we won, like, 38-31. All those holds were really big, I think. And then, you know, TCU was big because we won 14-7 at home. So, like, the two extra points were big. But it didn't feel as big because we didn't contribute as much.
Yeah, it doesn't feel big in the moment. But then you look back and you're like, shit, like, we kind of won that game.
Yeah. And the games that you end up winning by one, you feel like, oh, that was – you know, all those holds were, like, super important.
Yeah,
like,
yep.
We beat Memphis in the bowl game, 21-20. It's like, dang, those three extra points were crucial because I could have messed that up. Like,
yeah. It's like, well, I kind of – like, not a big deal, but I kind of won the game. Like,
yeah, but I didn't actually hold for any game winners, which I was a little salty about. But, you know, it is what it is.
I got to snap two of them.
Michigan and –
Michigan and Pitt, our Michigan first, or wait, no, it was 2015, the year we went undefeated, which that one was like a nice, it was tied, tie ball game, and it was a 57 yarder. So it was like, you know, we go out, like, you go out and practice with no fans, no team, it's just the unit out there, and you, a 57 yarder, you might go 60 or 70% on, maybe. Yeah,
maybe.
And so, like, in that situation at night versus another team, you're like, okay, well, this is just kind of like we get a chance.
Right. Yeah, it's pressure, honestly. Like,
and I still let it get to me a little bit. The snap was still a little off, but Marshall drilled it. And the feeling of being out there was, it's just for absurd.
Yeah.
But then you're right, against Michigan on the really the biggest one that in recent history for Iowa, they called a timeout. Harbaugh called a timeout. And their dumbass, out of the timeout, they only came out there with 10 guys. So they only rushed with 10 guys. They're so stupid. But during the timeout, it was the year before that we had kicked the one versus Pitt. And there was like three or four or maybe five guys out on the field who had been in the situation the year before. And I was kind of the most elder guy with the most snaps on that team. And it was a really cool moment to kind of like look around and be like, guys, we've been here. We do this every day. We're money. Let's go win this game right here. Like, I kind of calmed. I probably didn't calm anybody down, but in my head, I wanted to feel super important. And so, in the moment, I think I said something like, "Guys, I got the ball in my hands. This is no big deal. Let's go." Like,
you set the tone for everybody else, and I think that's one thing as a specialist. You have to have that confidence, because if you don't, like, no one else is going to, like, in you. Yeah. So, like, that's huge.
We could talk about this for hours, but we won't. Iowa State opened up their season on Saturday.
I was there.
You were there. I saw your Instagram stories, or maybe Snapchats. What happened there, man? Is Louisiana just a little better than than people thought, and Iowa State is just kind of hasn't figured it out yet? Or
I don't know. They were a good team. Because
watching on TV, they had some dudes. Like, they had some good.
They did. And I think going into it, Coach Campbell even alluded to that on the media. Like, they have one of the best QBs in that conference. Their running back was really solid. Like, some good players. But, you know, special teams, man. I think, you know, the percentage of teams when you lose the turnover battle, you give up any sort of special teams touchdown, your winning percentage is like this.
It's almost zero.
Almost impossible. If you look at the stats, like, even like losing the turnover battle, like, your winning percentage is like 25% or something crazy.
Yep.
The turnover battle is huge, and we always preach that, you know, I mean, everywhere does, but we did a lot, you know, because if you win in the turnover battle, like, we won like 75 or 80% of the games. When we lose the turnover battle, we win maybe 2 out of 10. Like, it was crazy stats. Like, but you know, the special teams touchdowns were huge. It just felt really flat.
Yeah, the coverage from my perspective on the special teams plays, you had guys that were giving effort, but it was they were in the wrong spots. I don't know if you caught the behind the I didn't. like the the end zone view. I rolled it back. Lauren was pissed at me. She's like, are we really going to analyze this? And I was like, yes, we're analyzing this. I want to see what happened. Your boys need to learn coverage lanes bad.
Yeah, so I was talking to my brother because my little brother's on the football team at Iowa State, and he had told me that they had all week they had watched that they were going to have field returns every time.
Yeah. And so, okay.
So they knew that going in, and I haven't seen the end zone cut, but from the sounds of it, they weren't in the spots that they obviously needed to be.
I was proud of the snapper because the snapper was leaning field side and he forced the guy to go, but he forced him into an open hole, and it felt like there should have been like at least another guy or two that,
But, you know, like I said, special teams, those touchdowns were just huge. The two turnovers hurt, obviously. And then just offense didn't seem to get it going, but it was weird to be in there. Cause you know, they were only allowing the family tickets.
It's weird. It's super weird.
So we literally pulled up, parked, cause there was no one tailgating, obviously. Like, we pulled up to the south end zone, parked, walked in with, you can bring snacks and like drinks into the stadium, non-alcoholic.
That's awesome.
But it was really cool. Like, we just walked in with, you know, some waters and stuff. But it was so nice. Like, we walked right up, you know, the thing, didn't have to fight a crowd. Like,
kind of weird.
Weird, but nice. Like, I was like, this is awesome. Like, we just sat down and there's no one around us. So you could just like put your feet on the, on the stands. And it was pretty chill. And the best part was, like, we didn't have to, there's no bathroom lines, dude. I walked in there was no one in the bathroom with me. I was like,
20 urinals. This is perfect.
I actually tweeted a picture of it. I was like, this is the best part of the game so far. And there's no, the picture of all the urinals. But
I think Purdy's obviously good. His receivers got to help him out by catching the balls, but
yeah, they had a few drops, which were in some key moments too, for sure.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if they figure it out or not. But Kyle Starcevich, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. It was fun to catch up. Just we need to hang out soon, my dude. That's it. Episode 145, capping off Iowa State week, or what could have been, on the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast. We will be back next week. Thank you guys for listening. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.